Let's jump in.
Let's just jump into it.
All right. Welcome to Tear Gas and Drum. You want to try it?
Drum Gups. Here we go. Shake off the wiggle. Here we go.
Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops. My name is Chris Morton. I am coming to you here with my co-host,
Kyle Sapp.
And Tear Gas and Gumdrops, Season 2. This is the podcast about the pain and sweetness of ministry and mission. And Kyle, everything is changing.
Everything is. In our last podcast, we talked about some things that are changing for Kyle coming up in season two. And now for this podcast, we're going to talk about things that are changing for Chris and probably the rest of the world, as I'm pretty sure his changes signaled the return of Christ. I'll let him explain more about that.
Yeah. Now,
so, Chris, what's changing in your world?
Well, we have occasionally referred to a lady who's a part of my life throughout this podcast. I think you actually chastised me once for calling myself single instead of unmarried.
Yep.
On the podcast. But yeah, on, let's see, this is Wednesday, and on this past Friday night, Laura and I got engaged. So.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's right, all you other ladies. Chris Morton is now off the market. Mm-hmm.
So for the three women who aren't my mom who may have come across this podcast, I'm sorry. You had your chance. It's been a long road. But Laura's awesome. And our life is awesome and going to get more awesome. So,
true death. So, story time.
Story time.
How it happened.
Okay. I'm going to show you something that totally makes this whole story pointless. Are you ready?
You know, this is a podcast and they can't see it.
Well, okay.
Oh!
So, here's the thing. We had this daydream that we were going to have this April wedding, and it was going to be nice in Austin in the spring. And then she has some family who are missionaries in West Africa, and they're like, we can be there in December. Like, okay, well, let's plan a New Year's wedding. And which meant I didn't have a ring in hand yet. And she also works in fashion, which makes picking out a ring more intimidating than I assume it usually is for most people. I got to work on picking a ring and got it in the mail, but it was apparent that we were going to have to do something quick, just for wedding planning and sanity's sake. There's a web service called Printstagram, and what it does is print Instagram pictures for you. And I had them make two little books made up of 98 pictures of our relationship from social media and other things that were just on our phone. These two little books. And the last two pictures were pictures of the ring, which was in the mail at the time. And so then I set up a little picnic in the park where it was a special part to our relationship. If there are any single guys listening to you, the number one compliment I've gotten from people who have heard this story or seen the pictures is, where did you get that tablecloth? So, gentlemen, use a tablecloth. Apparently, that was like the best decision of my life. Use a tablecloth.
Well done. Right. Well done.
Target.
This podcast is brought to you by tablecloths.
By tablecloths.
Making your picnics look fancy.
And I cooked a pork loin pot roast that I had made for her on our 6-month dating anniversary.
That sounds yummy.
And so,
wow, you made that for her on your 6 months? That thing had to be old by now.
You have no idea. No idea at all.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, so we tried to light. So a couple of buddies of mine from Mustard Seed showed up and helped me cart everything to the park. And the plan was we had to find my friends on our phone so we know where each other are at all times because we're creepy like that. And so I told my roommate that Laura was coming over for dinner. and that he should tell her when she gets here to look for me on Find My Friends. And he looks back at me. You'll appreciate this, Kyle. He says, "Oh, I get it. Your princess is in another castle." And I was like, "Yeah, yeah. Just say that. Just say that when she comes." So we go to the park, and I put out the find a table, put down the tablecloth, set up all the food, and then I'm following her on Find My Friends, and I see that she is at my house and just sitting there. So I text my roommate. I'm like, "You're gonna just have to go out there and tell her she's sitting in the car." So apparently, what she told me later was that he walked up to the car door, opened the car door, and leaned in and said, "Your princess is in another castle," and she was like, "Ugh." And he said, "You know, look him up on Find My Friends." And she drove to the park walked up and saw all the things. And we looked at the little book, and I asked her to marry me with a ring that is not her actual ring, because I had to buy some in-between ring until the real one got here in the mail. But
was it a ring pop ring?
It was not much more than that, but she actually really likes it. Here's the funny thing, and then this is also a pro tip to any guy who's trying to figure this stuff out. We're 10 minutes into the meal, okay? She has got the in-between ring on her finger, and we're now relaxed and enjoying the night. She leans over to me and says, "In the books, you had the picture of a ring. Why was that in there?" And I said, "Because that's gonna be your ring, not that little band that's on your finger." And she's like, "Oh, I had no idea. I just thought it was a picture of her ring." And I had been stressing out about this, and she just wanted to be engaged. So guys, like, just don't stress out. Don't make it too complicated. Get a tablecloth.
Or, you know, communicate.
I thought it spoke for itself.
Nothing speaks for itself, apparently. Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I put so
much
effort.
6 months down the road, you're going to have your like first marital spat. And be like, "I thought it spoke for itself." And I'm like, "Yes." Remember the engagement?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. So, we're deep.
Good for you, man.
Thanks, dude.
Very happy.
It's exciting. I'm glad that you've gotten to meet her. And,
yeah. Was I in the book?
No. There were no pictures that included you and her and I. So we gotta fix that next time.
Next time.
Let me just kind of throw out there what we're gonna do here. This season, we're gonna kind of bounce back and forth. We're gonna do some interviews with other people who have been boots on the ground, super involved in ministry for a while, and learn from them. And at least that's the goal. I don't think we've actually asked anyone yet, so we should get on.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't.
We should do that.
We've been a little busy. There's transition.
There's things. Like, everything is changing. What we're hoping to do is hear from other people who've been involved in ministry for a while, and in keeping with the name and theme of this podcast, as the bitterness and pain side by side, juxtaposed with the sweetness of ministry. We want to hear people's tear gas story and their gumdrop story, and just kind of get a snippet of other people's experience in ministry. And so, because we're new at this whole interviewing thing, we're really good at kicking the can and shooting the breeze together. But we're new at this, so we're gonna try to interview each other today pretty quickly. With our three interview questions. And this will also serve as a good intro or review if you're new to the podcast. So here's the intro question.
Here we go.
Kyle Sapp, tell us who you are and what your current ministry situation is.
Oh, good grief. We're really doing it like this? Okay, here we go. Hi, my name's Kyle. And in the next 3 weeks, I'm going to transition to Cordova Church of Christ up near Sacramento, California, and be the young adult slash transitioning into the pulpit preacher.
Hmm. Tell us like what you're excited about that new situation.
I think the thing that excites me the most is two things, maybe three. There's a lot, actually. One, I'm excited to begin preaching on a regular basis over the next year.
Yeah,
that I've been working on sermon plans, and the first 2 years are pretty...
2 years?
Two together. It's really not as hard as you think, making sermon series, particularly for a church that you've never met before, so idea is a good idea at this point. That'll be, of course, that'll be honed. The goal is to get a 5-year plan. So I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about developing new ministries. The young adult ministry has not a lot of form to it right now, and so mm-hmm. we're going to give it form and structure and intentionality. And so that excites me. Just this starting from kind of, in a lot of ways, we're starting from scratch. Not that we're reinventing the wheel. These are ministries that people have been doing. So, you know, we're just going to give it a little bit of flavor. And I was thinking about this. It gives me a chance to pursue the nuns and the duns.
Yeah.
And to be intentional about that, to say, okay, so what can I do to create an environment where somebody who's been burned by a church mm-hmm. Will get to a point where they're willing to engage in a faith discussion. So, and I'm really excited about that. And I hope, I may be really bad at it. I don't know yet. you know, yeah. I'm hoping to get two out of the three is things that I do well. So we'll see what happens.
Nice.
So that's what excites me about that.
So this show is called Tear Gas and Gumdrops, and the tear gas represents really the hard days and the painful moments in ministry. Do you have a story from your 10, 12 years into ministry experience, if you count some things in college now? Do you have a story of tear gas that really encapsulates the hard times?
I think the hard times in ministry usually just come in those moments where I hear about a student who has decided to walk away from Christianity. Hmm. One of our students who I thought was really core and really solid a few years back, just has been through some stuff in life and is currently not interested in Jesus or church or faith at the moment. I'm not saying that they'll never be.
Right.
But right now, it's just not where they are, and that always hurts. You begin to wonder, could I have done something differently? Mm-hmm. What could that have been? Could I do something now?
Yeah.
And you really just kind of wrestle with. I guess in some ways, it's like a minister coming face to face with his limitations. That ultimately I can't make decisions for people.
So that
hurts. That's just hard to deal with. It doesn't, I don't feel like it happens all the time. Some of our students are still faithful.
Sure.
But when it does happen, it's pretty rough going. It takes a little time for me to kind of get out of my head on that one.
Yeah, man. I want to hear about that. Talk more about the getting out of your head, because I feel like I cause a lot of my own suffering. I spend a lot of time in my own head. That's where the hard moments are, not in real world, in my own head.
Sure. For me, I'm an external processor, so mm-hmm. I have to talk things out.
Yeah.
If I leave them inside just for me to kind of swirl around with, then it'll burden me. In some unhealthy ways, almost mm-hmm. in terms of an obsession. So I literally get it out of my head by talking about it with people, maybe with too many people, not in like a gossip way. I'd like to speak in vagueness. And usually it's people who don't have a connection to me or this ministry. And eventually you have to come to a point where it's not personal, that their decision about God is ultimately at least not about you. And maybe there's a part of it that is, but that's on them, not on you. Like, I can't I can't change that. But for the most part, it's not personal. And when ministers start taking that kind of burden on, I think we become kind of idolatrous.
Yeah. Well, where do you find those people to talk to? Because I feel like, you know, that's something you always hear. You hear about people, how lonely they are in ministry.
I'm not lonely in ministry. I have good friends with good relationships that I've intentionally cultivated over the years, who I talk to on a fairly regular basis. And they're all other ministers. And good things come from that.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I think we should probably have a conversation about that some other time, about how to cultivate those relationships. Because I found it valuable too, but it's been hard.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have any tips on that or anything.
Well, just the story of it, because I think you do a lot of things just naturally that like everybody does, it might be helpful. So we'll talk about that sometime. What about your gumdrop ministry, especially because you're at a really great reflecting point to look back over the last 10 years of youth ministry there. What's going to be one of your favorite memories? Maybe a win, or maybe just a happy memory.
I think the most recent favorite memory, we went to Waterworld this past Sunday, and it was Waterworld is a water park.
Right. I thought that was not the Kevin Costner.
No,
Mad Max one.
No, we're not doing that.
Gotcha.
It's not a huge water park. It's one of those water parks where you're like an hour and a half into a 5-hour sojourn at this water park, and you've done all of the rides.
Right.
And so it was about 3 o'clock, and I was with a couple of students, and there's this like side pool of the wave pool that's really shallow, and it looked super comfortable. And so I was like, hey, I'm gonna go sit over there in that water and just chill if you guys want to join me. And they did, and then some other students came, and we just talked for like an hour. And then we went and all got funnel cakes.
Nice.
And it was nice because it just kind of reminded me of, you know, the reasons that I got into youth ministry weren't to coordinate activities. It was to sit down and talk with students and just kind of live life together.
Yeah.
And it reminded me some of those other times that I've had, just sitting around shooting the breeze with teenagers and having good conversation. And I think those are always my gumdrop moments when a teenager blesses me with their friendship and with their honesty. And one of my students, one of my younger students, who there's always that fear when you transition out of youth ministry that the ministry is going to collapse and students aren't going to come anymore. And one of my students made a point to say, I just want you to know, when you leave, I'm going to keep coming and I'm going to keep being a part of this youth group. And I really was glad to hear that from him.
It's beautiful. Besides that guy, are there going to be any specific people that you, when you look back at this time, like, who are you going to think of? Who's going to bring a smile to your face? Kids or volunteers?
I'm not going to name specifics, just because I think they all will in their own ways.
Yeah.
And we don't have time for me to share all of those stories. But every kid in our group right now, I have a nice memory with in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And that's going to be good. And I think most of them will stick with me throughout the years.
Yeah.
Most of them. I mean, I'm pretty bad with names and memories, so who knows?
Yeah. I mean,
probably forget half of them by 6 months from now.
Oh, yeah, I was a youth minister.
Oh, that's what I did the last 9 years of my life. I was wondering. Yeah. I figured that out.
That's awesome, man. Well, what keeps you at it? Why are you still doing it after all this time?
Well, I guess I'm not, right?
You are and you are. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but you're not, you know, I've known a lot of youth ministers who went to teach high school or got a desk job somewhere.
Well, I guess what keeps me in ministry, and there will always be a youth focus. Like, I've talked to the youth minister at the next church about ways I can still be involved in the youth ministry, not because I want to be a youth minister still, but because I want to make sure that I have rapport with those students, because I'm going to be preaching on Sunday mornings, and I don't want to be zoned out. I don't want them to zone me out. I want them to be plugged in, and that happens through relationships and familiarity. And I stay in ministry. I don't think I have any other marketable skills. But the biggest reason is I believe this is my calling for how I am to work in the kingdom, to equip other believers for the work of ministry and to help them dive into scripture, dive into prayer, dive into worship, to be a confidant to them, and to listen to their stories. And maybe that's a chief role that you play as a leader, is honoring people by listening to their stories in a world that really doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And I want to listen to certain stories, and I want to listen to everybody's story.
Yeah, and I almost wonder if that's a way to encapsulate why you stick at it, is the stories. The opportunity to hear and participate in those stories. That's awesome.
So, Chris Morton, who are you and what are you doing right now?
Well, I am a church planter in Austin, Texas. I don't know when you can stop saying church planter, because we're going to hit 2 years come October, about 3 weeks from now.
But that's a good question.
We launched Austin Mustard Seed 2 years ago, and I also have a day business where I help clients come up with a content and social media strategy. And I'm a podcaster. I'm a pod pastor. Sorry.
You're a pod pastor. Church planning, 2 years in. What do you think about it so far?
Man, you know, it is something I've been preparing for forever, like since I've known you. And I've been involved in other ways, been a part of other church plants, studied a lot, friends with a lot of planters. I would say that, I'm still doing it. I like it. I like the having to create something from scratch. I like the work of trying to imagine what a healthy church is like, and then trying to do the things that bring that to reality. And so I've been enjoying that a lot.
Cool. So, tell us about one of those moments that we would call your tear gas moments. It's a time of pain or struggle or frustration for you and your ministry.
Yeah. Well, I can think of, one where there's a couple who became a part of Mustard Seed. In a lot of ways, they were the kind of person I wanted to do church for. Like, I really did not see how they would fit in kind of an established typical church community. And they were fun. They were super available relationally. Like, they wanted to know people and be known. Long story short, there was some interpersonal conflict, and they decided to leave. And that was really tough, because on one hand, I really liked them. I wanted them to stick around. Like I said, they were the kind of people I wanted, that got me into this planting gig in the first place and made me think, like, I don't know that we have what they need. I don't. I was not surprised when the conflict came. I was not surprised that the conflict didn't resolve. And there was just like an inevitability to it that really was really hard. And even kind of made me question what we were doing. Like, can this even be done? This creating church for people who aren't trained in churching.
Yeah.
You know, is that even, you know?
Is that even
doable? And so, yeah, that kind of did make me kind of question why we're doing all the things that we're doing. And I'm still wrestling with those questions. It was hard to see those people go. But it kind of goes back to, like, what you were saying about watching some people walk away from church as a whole and from faith as a whole. Is like, there is kind of a just, like, you got to let them go kind of sense. Like the father giving the prodigal all of his money so he can go blow it. You just got to let them do it because they're going to do it. And it's not your place to control them. So, yeah, that was hard.
And so do you approach, you know, it sounds like that. Do you approach, because of how hard it was, do you approach potential church members differently?
I have a hard time trusting God. And trusting that this thing is something God is in and he's leading. I get freaked out. I freak out that we're going to get people who are too churchy, too Christian, to keep us from reaching the people I feel called to. I get freaked out that we're going to get people that are too driven by their own agenda to join a larger community without trying to mutiny and take it over. I find myself putting up these relational walls because of those fears, if that makes sense.
It does. So what do you do? You know, you strike me as someone who's fairly self-aware. So what do you do when you catch yourself putting up those relational walls? How do you knock them down?
Well, first off, I have to have some safe places where I can tell people about it. What I found is that when I have a knot in my stomach, it does me no good to just leave it as a knot. Like, I need to untie it, and my stomach may still be upset, but at least it's not knotted anymore. So I need to do that. But I also, like, I've also found that I need to spend enough time with these people to find what I can love about them, and so that I can think of that more than what it is that freaks me out. So, for example, like, you know, Austin's a very different place than the rest of Texas. And it even has a different look than the rest of Texas. Mm-hmm. And I very much want us to be an Austin church. And I have tried very hard to take on the persona of Austin. I moved here because I thought I'd fit in well. And when I see it, there's a very specific Houston look. And there's a very specific Dallas look. They had a whole TV show about it, you know. That's not us. And when I see people like that wandering on Sunday morning, that sets off this very judgmental, very not very Christ-like alarm. And so when I notice that going off on me, it just really pushes me more than I probably do with other people to hear their story and interact with them. I wouldn't say I got that figured out.
Trying to develop a little empathy.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to not be a jerk.
Yeah. You know, I think you make a really good point there. At least I hear you making this point that one of the best way to lower walls is to learn stories. And it's kind of I don't know if catch 22 is the right phrase, but you put up the walls, you don't want to learn the story, but you kind of have to force yourself to learn the story so that you can lower the wall. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you almost lower the wall before you even really lowered it, because you're putting yourself out there. You're going over the wall to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about a gumdrop moment, a victory, a joy that you have as a church planter.
Well, I keep going back to one story that happened very early on, within our first 3 months or so. And to put a little context, two things. One is that my theological bent is Anabaptism. And what I mean by that is just kind of a very communal understanding of the church, that that we together are the church, and that really Christ called us to become this community. And so that's been the great experiment, is how can we form this community? And there's been a billion little things that I've done. Like, for instance, I went through all, we use pre-written prayers and we have songs, and I went and changed all the I's to we's, you know, and little things like that. They're like always, and whenever I preach, I'm always talking about what kind of community are we? What kind of people are we together? Not how does this apply to your life, but who do we become? So early on, we had this couple that joined us super early on. And they're like super fun young couple. And dude, his name's Tim. I've told this story from the pulpit, so he won't mind. So Tim shows up, and Tim's like kind of nerdy that you and I get along with really well.
Like those kinds of nerdy. Yeah.
And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, this other couple show up, and we jokingly referred to them as Belle and Gaston, because they're like these very beautiful, very like larger than life beautiful people, incredible hearts, incredibly loving. So one night after this church event, and it's the second time that their names are Brett and Ashley, not Belle and Gaston. Second time Brett and Ashley have been there. And Brett and Ashley and Tim and I, the four of us, go up for drinks. And Tim is going through the history of Batman graphic novels in the 80s and 90s with these people he just met, starting with The Dark Knight Returns with Frank Miller, and just like really laying that out. And I'm looking and like have two simultaneous thoughts of one, like, oh, crap. When you read in leadership books and they say, you attract the kind of person you are, I didn't know that meant I was going to surround myself mm-hmm. with other people who were as geeky about these things as I am. Yeah, and so on one hand, I'm like totally matched with Tim. I'm like, oh man, you're my guy. I love that. I love Frank Miller too. Dark Knight Returns. Da, 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 da. But then on the other hand, I'm like, oh man, don't screw this up. Don't screw this up, dude. Well, all that to say, 3 weeks later, I come in to set up early on a Sunday morning, and I see Tim, Batman guy, show up in a truck. He doesn't own a truck. It's not his truck. He shows up in a truck. And
okay.
And I say, Tim, what are you doing in that truck? And he says, oh, that's Brett's truck. My car's in the shop, and he's just letting me borrow. And we kind of, for some reason, they weren't able to get it fixed immediately. And Brett's letting me drive it for the next couple of weeks. Dude, like, just met the guy, had a beer with him, talked about Batman, even though he didn't get super into Batman, and then gave him the keys to his car. And it was just like all of those dreams of the church coming together to care for each other and to embody the teachings of Jesus. Like, I was seeing it right there. And I don't know that I did anything other than kind of create a space where those two people could meet each other and try at least to set the expectation that we care for each other and love each other. And it was so cool to see it.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a neat... What is it about that, that like that guy just kind of has it figured out already, like the early church mm-hmm. meets needs of people? Hey, I just met you 5 minutes ago. And I don't feel like it's foolishness.
Right.
Like, I would like to think that the guy has a discerning heart and can mm-hmm. tell that this is someone that I can trust, or at least I have a decent amount of sense that I can trust them, mm-hmm. and I'm really willing to risk that.
Yeah.
All right, that's a cool story.
Yeah.
And you can't force that either. Like, that's super organic.
Yeah, that was what was so great about it, was that, God just gave us those people. Like, we couldn't have recruited them. We couldn't have trained them. And they are creating, even as we speak, they are creating the foundation that this church is growing up on. They're the examples, you know. And God sent us the people we needed to do that.
Excellent. So, what keeps you coming back? I mean, if anybody has come back and forth and back and forth in church planning, it would be you, Chris Morton, the yo-yo of ministry. And I mean that in a kind way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Because you come back.
I do. So I do.
Come back.
Yeah, and there's other podcast people can go back and listen to season one and hear me whine and complain about that. But, man, I just am really captivated by this idea that that Jesus represents and displays and teaches and empowers us for a better life. I love how Dallas Willard calls it the eternal kind of life. That when you're doing what Jesus says, it's not just about going to heaven when you die. It's about starting that kind of heavenly living right now. And I think that the world desperately needs communities that try to do that. I think that, you know, more than anything, well, okay. I also have to admit that there's kind of a personal side to this that I think I was really lonely growing up. I had a hard time making friends. I think I still do. It's kind of weird. Church was, well, I didn't even really have friends at church because I didn't really have any peers. But it made sense to me from an early age that you needed these people to do life with. And I remember even as a little kid, like, desperately wanting some of my friends to have that experience, even though it wasn't a terribly healthy experience for me. I kept thinking, you know, man, they need to be a part of a church. And I still believe that. I still believe that life is better together when lived out in the way of Jesus. And so I get more excited about this than anything else, about envisioning and creating communities that can experiment in the way of Jesus.
Cool. All right. Well, there you go. That's Chris Morton in a nutshell.
Well, we should probably book some interviews.
Yeah, we should figure that out. And, you know, why don't we elicit, like, you know, listener feedback from the people who hear this.
If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Give us a great review on iTunes. Share it on social media, on Facebook. What else? Tell your friends to listen and subscribe. Yeah, subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review.
Subscribe on iTunes.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thanks, Kyle.